The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
All rise! The Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez! 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 All persons with business with this court shall come forward and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God bless the United States and God bless this honorable court.
We eliminated God on our
court. Oh, you have.
Not sure. They put out something, so.
All right.
So that they have Judge Reinhardt there in the second seat. The two of you can switch.
Oh, all right.
Now, please be seated.
If I may, before we start the round, I just wanted to give our audience a quick introduction to our distinguished panel of judges. First of all, serving as our Chief Justice today is the Honorable Boyce Martin. Judge Martin received his law degree from the University of Virginia School of Law and received a Doctor of Laws from Hanover College. After years of private practice in Louisville, Kentucky, he was appointed as a judge for the Jefferson Circuit Court in 1974 and the Kentucky Court of Appeals in 1976. In 1979, Judge Martin was appointed to the United States Courts of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, where he served as chief judge from 1996 to 2003. On the Sixth Circuit, Judge Martin has issued a wide variety of opinions, including a thorough examination of the First Amendment issues implicated by a large inflatable rat balloon in Tucker versus City of Fairfield, Ohio. He is currently Chief Judge Emeritus of the Sixth Circuit. The Honorable Stephen Reinhardt. After graduating from Yale Law School, the Honorable Stephen Reinhardt began his legal career by serving as a lieutenant in the Legal Counsel's Office of the United States Air Force. After practicing here in Washington, D.C., he returned to his hometown of Los Angeles, California, where he worked in private practice for a number of years and served as an advisor to the former Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley and former California Governor Jerry Brown. Judge Reinhardt was appointed to the United States Courts of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit in 1980 by President Jimmy Carter. In this role, he has authored several notable opinions, including Yanigas versus Arizonans for Official English, in which it was ruled that an English-only provision in the Arizona Constitution was overly broad and violated the First Amendment right to free speech. The Honorable Rosemary Pooler. Judge Pooler received her JD from the University of Michigan Law School. She has enjoyed a long and varied law career, including private practice in Syracuse, New York, and service on a number of public commissions. In 1990, Judge Pooler was appointed Justice of the Supreme Court, 5th Judicial District, State of New York, before becoming a United States District Judge for the Northern District of New York in 1994. In 1998, she was appointed to the United States Courts of Appeals for the Second Circuit by President Bill Clinton. Of particular interest to this competition, Judge Pooler drafted the majority opinion in Burt versus Gates, which held that a Yale Law School challenge to the requirements of the Solomon Amendment was controlled by the Supreme Court's decision in Rumsfeld versus Forum for Academic and Institutional Rights, and that the academic freedom argument offered by the plaintiffs was unpersuasive. The Honorable Reggie Walton. Judge Walton received his law degree from the American University Washington College of Law in 1974. He served as an associate judge of the Superior Court of the District of Columbia and was associate director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. He was nominated to the federal bench by George W. Bush and now serves as a district judge for the District of Columbia. Judge Walton has presided over a number of high-profile cases, including the Scooter Libby perjury case, U.S. v. Libby. He is also currently presiding over the case of Hatfield versus Ashcroft concerning the former Attorney General's identification of the plaintiff as a person of interest in the investigation of the post-9/11 anthrax scares. The plaintiff has sought to identify the source of the leak, which has given the case an interesting free press angle. And finally, Thomas Goldstein. Thomas C. Goldstein graduated summa cum laude from the American University Washington College of Law in 1995. He has argued 17 cases before the Supreme Court, winning 4 of his last 5 appearances, including the highly influential patent case of KSR versus Teleflex and the unanimous 2005 decision of Turn versus Barber Foods. In addition, he served as second chair on behalf of Vice President Al Gore in the notorious case Bush v. Gore. Mr. Goldstein co-heads the Supreme Court practice as a partner at Atkin Gump. In addition to practicing law, Mr. Goldstein teaches Supreme Court litigation at both Stanford and Harvard Law Schools. Since 2003, he has been principally responsible for SCOTUS blog, which is devoted to coverage of the court and is widely recognized as one of the nation's premier legal blogs. And with that, we'll enjoy the round. Thank you.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. We will begin with hearing from the first of those arguing for the appellant. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Martin, Associate Justices. May it please the court, my name is Julia Romano. My co-counsel, Lynette Bedrosian, and I represent the petitioner, Shivanka University School of Law. Chief Justice Martin, may I please reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal?
You may.
Thank you. Public universities must be allowed to execute reasonable regulations in order to ensure that each and every student receives a robust education free from discrimination. I will begin by arguing that the school has not violated LSC's First Amendment right to expressive association. And then my co-counsel, Ms. Bedrosian, will argue that the school has also not violated the Establishment Clause. Your Honors, the school has not violated LSC's First Amendment right to expressive association, and thus summary judgment was appropriate for the following 2 reasons. First, the school was well within its rights under O'Brien and Healy to condition official recognition of student organizations on adherence to the school's non-discrimination policy.
And second, don't they have a provision in their own bylaws that violates the school's provision?
That is correct, Your Honor. LFC's bylaws, which are found on the record, page 4, the LFC's bylaws, their own non-discrimination policy, is in violation of the school's non-discrimination policy.
It's in violation, or it just doesn't include something that you think it should be included?
From LFC's non-discrimination policy, the words religion and sexual orientation are omitted. And if you look to the record on page 3, these protected classes are protected under the school's non-discrimination policy.
So it's your position that every group has to not only not engage in discrimination, but has to make some further special promise? Or is it where you don't really care about their non-discrimination policy? You think that the fact that they discriminate against homosexuals is enough?
Your Honor, the school requires all officially recognized student organizations to adhere or comply to the school's non-discrimination policy. And this court in Healy versus James held that a school administration may impose a requirement on official recognition that the organization adhere in advance to a reasonable campus law. And the school's non-discrimination policy is a reasonable campus law under United States versus O'Brien.
Could you force them to actually include homosexuals under Dale?
No, Your Honor. This case is distinguishable from Dale because it is not a forced inclusion case.
Well, you mean it's not a forced inclusion case because they could go out of business and not be recognized anymore. As a practical matter, isn't it a forced inclusion case? If they want to be on the same footing as other organizations, they have to admit homosexuals, right?
Your Honor, if LFC wishes to gain official recognition, then they may not discriminate against homosexuals. However, the school has given LFC and all student organizations a choice to adhere to the non-discrimination policy and gain the benefits that come along with official recognition, or to not
That's
adhere
not
to the
much
policy.
Of a choice. You're saying that the government can withhold funds from people because they want to exercise their right to associate.
Your Honor, the school is not withholding funds because LFC wishes to be an expressive association. However, if
Why are they withholding funds?
Because, Your Honor, LFC is in violation of the school's non-discrimination policy.
But they're only in violation of the non-discrimination policy because they're engaging in expressive association. If it wasn't, the only reason, right, is that they don't want to associate with homosexuals.
Your Honor, LFC does not want to engage or to associate with homosexuals.
And because of that, you all won't give them the money.
Well, as a private organization, LFC may freely discriminate based on whatever class or beliefs or conduct that it wishes. However, in order to gain official recognition, all student organizations must adhere to the school policy.
They must give up their right of expressive association.
No, Your Honor. LFC can operate as an unofficial student group. And as the record on page 4 states, the attendance at LFC's meetings pre and post official recognition have been the same. And therefore, LFC is still engaging in expressive association simply as an unrecognized student.
Council, has the school considered saying that you extend recognition to all student groups regardless of viewpoint and you don't necessarily agree with the viewpoint? Isn't that, wouldn't that both protect the school's interest in no discrimination and allow LFC to continue to function as they wish to?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because without this non-discrimination policy in place, the school has no way to protect each and every student's right to an education. And as a public university...
I thought you just said the opposite. You said they're doing just fine discriminating against people without recognition. Seems to me your whole point was that your policy doesn't accomplish anything, so why should we bother?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Your answer to Justice Pooler is, we have to have this policy because we actually need to protect our students. But your answer to Justice Reinhart was, it doesn't so much matter. They're doing just fine. They're having all the meetings they want. The official recognition thing is more of a symbolic statement. And I just don't understand the tension between those two. You say, we've got to protect our students, but you answer a question by saying, well, who knows?
Your Honor, the school does have a duty to afford equal access to each and every student.
Is that because there were student fees that are used? If there were no student fees involved, would that same argument bear fruit?
It would, Your Honor. However, the public funding issue here is important. As this court held in Rumsfeld versus the Forum of Academic and Institutional Rights, in that case, this court held that Congress or the federal government was not infringing on the law school's expressive association rights by conditioning federal funding on adherence to the Solomon Amendment. And in that case, Congress held the purse strings, whereas in this case, the public university, the public law school, holds the purse strings. And thus,
what if they withheld the funding and left the student organization as it was?
Your Honor, that is what LFC is doing. It has withheld the benefits of official recognition without requiring that LFC change its message or change its discriminatory conduct. LFC may discriminate freely as an unrecognized student group.
When did who holds the purse strings become more important than what is the expressive viewpoint?
Your Honor, a discriminatory belief does not violate the school's non-discrimination policy. Only discriminatory conduct violates the school's policy. And using the language that this court used in Rumsfeld, as the Solomon Amendment regulates conduct, not speech.
If you're concerned with conduct here, would the First Amendment allow you to kick them off campus altogether, even as an unofficial organization? Are you free to do that as well?
No, Your Honor. That would place too heavy a burden on LFC's expressive association.
Why? Right? I thought that you said that you're just addressed to their conduct. If you're really going to be addressed to their conduct, which is discrimination against your students, why can't you just kick them off? What's the difference in burden? Why is that a material difference in burden?
Your Honor, LFC, the school sees or recognizes that LFC does have a right to expressive association. However, as this court stated in United States JCs versus Roberts, this freedom to associate is not absolute. And so the school is allowing LFC to promote its message on campus, to promote its religious beliefs through speech, but not through discriminatory conduct as an officially recognized student.
Let me just ask this, counsel. Did the school act precipitously in taking the action that it took? There's nothing in the record, is there, indicating that there's been actual discrimination employed by the organization?
Your Honor, the school does not have to wait for a single homosexual student to be excluded. LFC has already done the discriminatory act by adopting these new bylaws, which require members or officers to sign the faith pledge, as well as adopting the non-discrimination policy, which omits religion and sexual orientation from the list.
I thought it was undisputed that you could come to the meetings, though, right? You can't be a member of the group, but you can show up and attend their meetings, right?
That's true.
And so you say that it's sufficient to do what you acknowledge is an impingement on their rights, the fact that they won't formally let you be a member of the group.
Your Honor, the membership discrimination that LFC is currently employing is very similar to the membership discrimination that this court struck down in Roberts. And in Roberts, the United States JCs allowed women to participate in its activities and events and to share its philosophies, yet did not allow women to be full members.
Well, in Roberts, there was no message the group was sending. There was nothing inconsistent with the JCs in having women there. It wasn't contrary to their philosophy. Here you're forcing a member on a group that doesn't believe in the philosophy of homosexuality.
It's much more like Dale.
Your Honors, again, LFC has a choice whether to adhere to the policy and be an officially recognized group or to simply not adhere to the policy
and give up its government funding because the state's discriminating against it.
Yes, Your Honor, but also, as the record on page 4 states, prior to affiliating with the national chapter, this Western Orthodox Christian student organization was in compliance with the school's non-discrimination policy. And it states on page 4 of the record that the student organization affiliated with the national LFC in order to gain additional resources. And therefore, LFC voluntarily chose to pick one benefit over the other. And LFC's message, either by adhering to the non-discrimination policy or by operating as an unofficial group, will not be materially impaired.
Counsel, Justice O'Connor's concurrence in Roberts talked about access to commercial opportunities. That's why women had to be members of the JCs. What if membership in LFC helped law students get clerkships after law school through a network of LFC-friendly judges? Would that make a difference?
No, Your Honor, it won't.
Why not? That was the very basis of allowing women into the JCs, so they could have equal opportunities to commercial opportunities.
But, Your Honor, here, LFC has failed to show how adhering to the non-discrimination policy would materially impair the message. If there is,
but I'm asking you, if it turned out, hypothetically, that membership in this organization helped you in your career after you left law school, would that change your view on whether this was acceptable to disqualify them?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, whether the
whether it was acceptable to decertify this organization.
It would be, Your Honor, because LFC is still in violation of the school's constitutional non-discrimination.
But there are countervailing equities that you have to consider, just like in Roberts.
That is true, Your Honor. However, here, LFC has voluntarily chosen to not adhere to the school's non-discrimination policy.
You can't. I mean, it's in the nature of these rules that give people choices amount to discrimination. It's true you're saying, well, come take the money. What are you whining about? But that's the whole point of their case, is they have to give up. Do you accept that for them to take your money, they have to give up a fundamental tenet of their religious belief?
No, Your Honor, not at all. LFC, as an officially recognized student organization, may still evince the views that homosexuality is sinful.
No, but they don't want to admit them, right? They don't want to associate with them. And you're saying in order to take our money, you have to give up that, right? You have to associate with them as members of your organization.
Yes, Your Honor, but that speaks to the discriminatory conduct of LFC's membership discriminatory
right, practices. But it is a fundamental, it's a sort of one of their core views, right? That's why they're fighting so hard, is they don't want to associate with non-believers and homosexuals, and you're saying you have to give it up. And so while you say that's a choice, it's a very serious choice for them. It's quite something they'd be sacrificing.
But, Your Honor, again, the school has given LFC a forum within which to promote its message. Even as an unrecognized group, as the record on page 4 states, the school is still allowing LFC to reserve rooms, to use campus to advertise and promote their religious beliefs. And there is no evidence in the record. I see my time is up. May I briefly?
And finish your sentence. That's quite all right. Keep going.
Thank you. There's no evidence in the record that the group has in any way suffered, especially that its message has suffered since derecognition. And therefore, the school was well within its rights to condition official recognition on adherence to this non-discrimination policy.
Very well. Thank you very much. We'll give you time for rebuttal. We'll hear from the appellee. All right. Forgive me. Everyone is a bit different on how we handle these. We'll do the two issues from you instead of going on the everybody gets a rigid point of view, see, and you have to be flexible in this kind of operation. So I apologize. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Martin, Associate Justices. May it please the Court, Lynette Bedrosian for the petitioner, Cervenka University School of Law. The banner of religious freedom cannot be used to justify discrimination. Summary judgment is appropriate because the school's non-discrimination policy does not violate the Establishment Clause for the following two reasons. First,
but the point is that, all right, is there a contested and disputed fact that makes the summary judgment inappropriate? Isn't there a question of the implementation of the policy that gives rise to being, if interpreted in the light most favorable to the group, summary judgment was inappropriate?
Summary judgment is appropriate, Your Honor, using not only the Civil Rules of Procedure 56, but also Celotex, because there is no ambiguity on the record.
It's a good thing we're in this Supreme Court and not my Supreme
Court.
There's some disagreement on that, as you can probably tell.
Before this court today is a school policy that provides for the right balance between
but
the
sacred. That's a question of fact, isn't it? Policy? What is the policy of the school?
What's the balance?
What's the question? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What's the policy? What's the balance?
What's the balance?
Is this something that should be tried, or do you think it's so clear that we can just cut the case off? They're very concerned about how you're interjecting themselves into religious decisions. It's kind of unusual for, with these contested questions about the effect of the policy and how it works, for us to just decide this thing on the papers rather than having, you know, getting the witnesses in there. I think that's part of the concern.
Yes, and that is a reasonable concern. However, there is no ambiguity on the record. As the record stands, and using de novo review, there is no material issue of triable fact. The primary effect of this policy is to enable LFC to use school funds and school facilities on the same terms as all the other 60 organizations on campus. And should this court use the Lemon Test today or choose to apply the other Establishment Clause, alternative Establishment Clause test, this policy passes all of the tests.
Counsel, are you familiar with Good News versus Milford School District?
I am not.
Okay. Continue.
All right.
Well, tell me how this would work. Let's assume that they decide to take the money. How is it that you're going to figure out whether or not they're actually engaging in discrimination? What is it that you intend to do to police the implementation of your policy?
There is no excessive entanglement. That goes to the policing question. The government benefits the entanglement between the school and the organizations ends upon disbursement of benefits. The only thing the school does ask is that the 60 organizations on campus comply with a neutral towards religion, reasonable, generally applicable policy.
But could you just answer my question, which is what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to figure out if they're complying?
If they're complying with the non-discrimination policy?
What if somebody comes to you and complains and says, they wouldn't let me into the group, I think it's because of I'm Jewish or because I'm homosexual. What is it that you're going to do to figure out what's going on and whether to cut off their funds?
Well, speculating, the first thing the school would do would be to see if the organization is complying with the school's non-discrimination policy. The beauty of the language of the school's non-discrimination policy...
Can I just try one more time? I want to know how you're going to do that. I know you're going to find out, and I'm just asking how. I mean, that seems to me to be a question kind of entanglement, so I'm just interested. Maybe the record doesn't say.
The record doesn't say. So.
Well, wait. The record. What is the basis for your decision that they're not complying?
They came to us, this student organization, enjoyed school recognition for 20-something years on campus.
Yes, and what is it that caused you to change your mind about the group?
It put the school on notice that it dropped religion and sexual orientation from its own policy.
How do we know that they didn't do that just for the purpose of trying to get additional funding from the national organization, whereas they would still comply with how they've acted all along on your campus?
We don't know that, but the bottom line is that they chose the national organization, OCLSA, they chose a national organization and the benefits that go with being attached to a national organization over school funding. They were on notice. They enjoyed school recognition for 20 years.
Did they turn down your school funding? Did they send the check back?
No.
So I don't know that they chose anything. I think you chose it. And the question that's being put to you is, you know, did someone come to you and say I was kept out because I'm a homosexual? Or did you just decide when they stopped promising not to discriminate that that was sufficient to violate your policy?
The latter, Your Honor. We decided that once this school came to us, put us, the school, on notice that it planned on discriminating not on one front, but two fronts, the school decided to disassociate itself and public funds.
Okay. How did they notify you that they were planning on discriminating?
The record states on page 3 that the LFC had to re-register because it changed its name. It became a chapter of the national organization.
And is there something in the chapter of the national organization that demonstrated to you that they were planning on not complying with your policy?
Yes, they dropped religion and sexual orientation from their bylaws and from their faith pledge.
But that's kind
of
different.
Now you're up to the faith pledge. Okay.
Yeah, because the dropping it from the policy doesn't seem to get you anywhere. What if they just said, we won't have a policy of non-discrimination? That's a different thing from saying they're going to violate your policy of non-discrimination.
So tell us about the faith pledge.
I think this all boils down to lawful discrimination versus unlawful discrimination.
No, it comes down to the question, and that is, tell us about the faith pledge. Tell us what in the faith pledge convinced you that they were going to discriminate.
They condemn homosexual conduct, homosexual activity, and they also, if you sign their faith pledge, you must be a member of their religion. And the Title IV of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits any school from not having a non-discrimination policy when it comes to religion, not just public school, lower grade schools, but also public universities. Therefore, just taking the religion aspect of this, the school is constitutionally required to protect religion. And that is this group, LFC, has told the school that we plan on discriminating not only as applied to sexual orientation, but also applied to religion.
They didn't explicitly say that.
They have dropped religion and sexual orientation, and they have closed the door on those students that do not convert to their orthodox of religion, and they have closed the door on gay bisexual students on campus, put up a sign and said, gays and anyone else need not apply. And this court has never held that that is okay. In Bob Jones University, this court held that the school was not allowed to discriminate based on race, and in that case, it was interracial marriage.
Can I just clarify, what on the question of closing the door to homosexuals, I understand that they have condemned homosexuality. You happen to think that's fine, as I understand from your colleague. What provision of their bylaws or something else says you cannot be a member of our organization if you're a homosexual?
It doesn't. They do welcome homosexuals if the homosexual either repents or perhaps is in the closet.
So practicing, you mean practicing. What provision of the faith pledge prohibits practicing homosexual?
Sure, an open homosexual. If, say, someone is an open homosexual and applies to the group, your colleague says, well, we don't have to wait for them to be turned down because we know it will happen. So what's the provision that says, yes, they will turn down someone who's an open homosexual and won't be allowed to be a member of the group?
There is no provision exactly expressly like that, Your Honor, but that is not why their recognition was revoked. The reason their recognition was revoked was because they dropped three words. First, religion, and second, sexual orientation from their policy in direct violation of the school's policy. In Hialeah, this court held, or rather defined what a general and generally applicable and neutral law is. And there, this court held that a law, if it is not aimed to infringe upon or restrict practices based on their religious motivation, is generally applicable and neutral. And on the record, on page 3, joining LFC was not a religiously motivated
decision.
When you
say the record, page 3, are you talking about the bench memorandum?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No? They were from something different.
Yes, no, I think that's what she's referring to.
Are you referring from the bench memo? We're unsure as to what you're referring to.
Where the record?
Do we have a record? We don't have a record.
What does it say in the record?
Oh, okay. When, after enjoying 23 years of school recognition, when this organization decided to join the national organization, LFC, it did not do so because of religiously motivated ideals. It explicitly states it simply did so because it wanted access to national organizations, wider access to their
funds. That was my question I asked before. How do we know that that's maybe why they made the change, just to gain access to the funds, but didn't really intend to change their policy about who could become a member and associate with them? I mean, what if the individual chapter, in and of itself, decided to maintain its policy it had engaged in all along, which was not in violation of the school's policies, but they just changed the words of this policy statement for the means of accessing the funds? And that's why I asked before, isn't the action precipitous that was taken by the university in not recognizing them without showing that they actually were engaged in discrimination?
Your Honor, it wasn't precipitous because they put the school on notice that they did plan on doing it because of dropping those words. Had they chosen to affiliate, joining LFC is not the problem, but amending their bylaws and discriminating on religion and based on sexual orientation is the problem. And in Smith, in the majority opinion, this court explicitly stated that never in its history has this court excused a person from a generally valid law, compliance with a valid law, because of his or her religious beliefs. And what we have before this court today is a law that provides balance between the sacred and the civil. It's neutral, it's generally applicable, and one organization on campus is asking the court, the school, to look away while the group discriminates to front.
You say that it's about their conduct, and there is this question of entanglement. How is it that you intend to figure out with organizations if they're really discriminating on the basis of religion? So let's say that the organization, and you had an organization that purports to not discriminate on the basis of religion, but you get a complaint that says, look, there's nobody who's Jewish in this group, and I think that they really are excluding Jews. Do you intend to sort of examine the religious bona fides of the members of the group? How do you intend to figure that out?
There would have to be. It is a school. There would have to be some type of looking at that organization where the complaint came from. However, the beauty of Lemon is that it prohibits excessive entanglement. This is a school.
Can I just try one more time? I understand your answer to my question is you would have to do something, which I was pretty much on to. I'm trying to figure out what you would do. What I want to know, their concern with entanglement is that, you know, you're going to have to really get into the mix of these organizations and the religion of the members and those sorts of things. And so they ask a somewhat pragmatic problem. Maybe, again, it's not in the record, but maybe that's a point in their favor about the need to have a trial. So what would you do? Would you interview the students about their religion? Would you interview the group's leaders about what they were intending to do with respect to religion? How would it work?
Two ways. First, the school would have to see if that organization that is being complained about has complied with the school's non-discrimination policy.
And how?
By seeing if they are, if they have student recognition, then they are complying with it.
Well, but my premise is that it is a student organization, and they're accused of violating the policy.
Okay.
And now you have to try and figure out if they're violating the policy. I'm just trying to figure out how you intend to do that.
The school would have to make an inquiry into their membership practices.
Did you do that here? Did the school do that here?
The record is silent on that.
Then why isn't this a candidate for trial?
I don't understand why you have to make an inquiry into their what they've actually done. Are you not satisfied with what their policies are as a basis for your decision?
Chief Justice Martin, my time is up. May I briefly...
May continue. Please answer the question.
Could you answer that question one more? Could you?
Yes, I'm trying to find out, are you relying on their policies as to membership so that you don't have to reach the question of what their actual practices are, or are you agreeing that you have to look at their actual practices?
No, Your Honor, the former. The school has no interest in excessive entanglement with a group's viewpoint or what their religious practices are. It merely requests compliance with its neutral non-discrimination
policy. No, but at compliance isn't the question. I'm asking whether you determine compliance by looking at the group's policies, or do you have to look at the group's practices?
Policies, Your Honor. And therefore, we ask that this court reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals dismissing petitioner's motion for summary judgment. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you. Now you may call. You may proceed. I mean, in fact, you can see. It's amazing. Is that light right in your eyes?
It was.
I don't see how. You've shown great poise. You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Ashley Kingery, and I, along with my co-counsel, Rich Winner, represent the respondents, Lawyers for Christ.
Pull that microphone down a little closer to you, please.
I will explain why the university's policy violates the freedom of expressive association, while Mr. Winner will explain why the university's policy violates the Establishment Clause. Cervinka University is forcing Lawyers for Christ to change their message by requiring that they accept members who hold different beliefs or face losing school funding.
Counsel, are you claiming abridgment of political speech or religious speech, or is there a difference today?
We are saying that they are regulating their speech.
Which, religious speech or political speech?
Religious speech, Your Honor.
Religious speech. And is that the same as political speech these days?
I suppose in some cases it could be, but what is key is that they are taking away their school funding and other means of communication. The Court of Appeals should be affirmed for two reasons. First, this policy is related to the suppression of the ideas of Lawyers for Christ. And secondly, there is a less restrictive way of implementing the policy without taking away from its effectiveness.
Could we just test the bounds of your position? If Lawyers for Christ was an organization that believed that African Americans were irreligious and this is obviously not what the organization believes, but incapable of being accepted by Christ into heaven, the organization would be perfectly free to condemn them and exclude them and would still be entitled under the Constitution to school funding?
Your Honor, as this court looked at in Boy Scouts of America versus Dill, as well as Roberts versus J.C.'s, if their message, or if the discrimination is based upon a sincere message of the organization, then yes, they may make that exclusion.
So if the Klan applied for recognition, you would have to recognize the Klan?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Your Honor?
KKK.
If the Klan applied to the school for recognition and funding, they would have to fund the Klan?
If it was their sincere belief that we're violating the non-discrimination policy, yes, Your Honor, because the freedom of expressive association...
Well, I assume the Klan believes in what they believe in.
Well, if the members that the university is trying to force into their organization would change their message, in that case, yes, then they would be allowed to make the discernment, which is required in Roberts, as well as Dale and many other cases that this court has decided, make the discernment between individuals who carry the same beliefs as the expressive association or not. Expressive associations come together to promote a specific message. And when the government policy...
How about Al-Qaeda, a local chapter of Al-Qaeda on the college campus?
Your Honor, as this court stated in Dale, a religious organization need not be logical, consistent, or comprehensible in order to merit the protections of the First Amendment.
But what?
It have to be religious? What about any organization that had a political view, a racial view, any kind of view?
Well, if the members, once again, would change their creed, change their ability to sincerely and effectively promote their message to the world, then yes, that is the protections that this Constitution...
So we have to fund an Al-Qaeda local chapter?
Your Honor, if it meets the other lawful requirements of the state, then yes, Your Honor, they would have to fund. But that is the
funding. Could the law school say they don't want to fund any student group that promotes violence in
yes.
pursuit of religious values, for example? Could they say that?
Yes, Your Honor, because that goes to a compelling state interest of public safety, which is a necessary thing for the college campuses to be able to regulate.
But well, that would have to be tested, wouldn't it? I mean, you couldn't win that on summary judgment, the question of safety, violence promoting and defense of religious values.
You presumably would say it would entangle the state too much to find out whether or not they really present a threat of violence, because they would have to police what it is that the organization intended to do.
Yes, Your Honor, it would create excessive entanglement, and we are not asking for summary judgment. We have asked, it was the Cervinka University who filed a motion for summary judgment. We are asking.
The point is that you're seeking then to uphold the remand.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that the summary judgment has nothing to do with your position.
That is correct.
All right.
That is correct.
What you're taking the position is that on remand, you'll establish that your organization is not an organization that will affect the public safety of the university, but in fact will only offer an opportunity for those of a certain group to express their personal preference as to those to whom with whom they wish to associate?
Yes, Your Honor. That is what we are placing before this court.
On remand, are you going to argue that you will accept homosexuals into membership?
Are we going to say that we will accept them into membership?
Yes.
No, Your Honor. We will still...
So on remand, won't you acknowledge that your organization bans homosexuals?
No, Your Honor. We are saying that they carry...
Well, you won't either ban them or accept them?
Oh, excuse me. I misunderstood what you said of the ban. Yes, we will continue to ban those who are gays and lesbians. And
you ban them because the organization opposes fornication, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, there are people who are in a loving relationship, whether they be heterosexual or bisexual or homosexual, who don't necessarily engage in sex. How are you going to make that determination? What if there was a couple who were a loving couple who were of the same sex, but they didn't engage in sex with each other? Could they come in?
Well, Your Honor, the record in the faith pledge states that even those who believe that this conduct is proper will be excluded because they are focusing on the belief of the sexual activity. So it is not just that they are not participating in the sexual activity themselves.
But then you acknowledge then that your policy does violate the school rules.
You just
think the rules are invalid.
Yes, Your Honor, it's inconsistent with what the school is trying to enforce upon Lawyers for Christ. And this will move me into the second point, that there is a less restrictive way.
Well, can we just, before we get to the less restrictive way,
yes,
where as part of it, their big pitch, I take it, is this isn't so bad. You can still be an organization. You won't get money from us, but you've got, you had five people show up at your meetings before and you're still doing great, you've got five again, that this is no big deal and you can, you know, post flyers or whatever. I mean, doesn't that take this case out from Dale, where the Boy Scouts were just being told flat out that they had to have gay scoutmasters?
No, Your Honor, and we state that in the record on page 4, that the membership levels have decreased. They have been affected. The membership level has gone from 8 to 5.
And yeah, but does the record indicate why that has occurred?
No, Your Honor, but this would be a good reason to remand the case back to the district court so we can inquire more upon.
Well, you probably want the membership down. You're trying to kick people out. That could be a reason it went down. Could we talk, right? That's what this case is about. But what about your ability to have meetings on campuses and things like that? Doesn't that make this different from Dale?
No, Your Honor, they are still allowed to meet on campus, but what opposing counsel has not mentioned is that they have taken away key means of communication. Yes, they can post flyers, but they are not allowed access to the email server. Therefore, they are losing the whole list of names of every student who they could send potential emails to and promote coming to their activities.
Is that right? Does the record discuss the question of one of the five members decides to send it to a listserv of all the students and says, we're having this meeting? That violates some provision of the student code?
It says that it has taken away their ability to email.
Could you explain to me why this case can't be decided on summary judgment? If you acknowledge that your policy excludes homosexuals, at least practicing or admitted homosexuals, and the school has a policy that says you can't do that, why do we have to go beyond those two policies which conflict and decide on summary judgment whether your policy is all right or whether it's not?
Your Honor, in this court, in Healy versus James, as well as Rumsfeld versus Fair and the Roberts case, found that there is a distinction between regulating conduct and regulating philosophy. And this goes back to the first point of that regulating their philosophy.
Right, but I think the question you're being asked is more procedural, and that is, okay, fine, if you think that's the legal issue, but do we not have a legal issue here that should be decided rather than something that requires a trial?
Well, the motion for summary judgment filed by Savinka University should not be granted for these reasons, because
What are those reasons?
They have not met their burden of proving that it is unrelated to the suppression of ideas.
You admit that you discriminate. Isn't that enough? You just admitted that. That you discriminate against homosexuals.
We discern against people who carry different philosophies of our own. However, a policy, the government
That's an argument that you should win. You should win the case. Isn't that the argument? Not that there are facts to be established?
What witnesses do you want to put on a trial? What do you intend to prove at trial that isn't already clear from the summary judgment record?
That it is related to the suppression of ideas. We did not file a motion for summary judgment. It was Savinka University that
filed
that.
Right, but you think it should be denied. You intend to what? Go get the president of the university and say, admit it, you're trying to suppress our ideas?
No, Your Honor, and if this court does decide to decide the case in our favor today, we would accept that. However,
that's good.
I'm conflicted as to how you distinguish between philosophy and context and conduct in the context of this case.
Yes, Your Honor. In Hurley versus Irish American Gay and Lesbian Group of Boston, the court stated that non-discrimination policies on their face regulate conduct. However, in Dale as well as Roberts, this court stated that when the actual effect of the policy is related to the suppression of ideas, then it violates the freedom of expressive association. And here, that effect is present. This is not the same case as Roberts, where the women did not affect the philosophy or creed of the JCs. Here, people who believe that homosexual conduct is proper will affect this creed.
Would you exclude someone who may not be engaged in homosexual behavior, but is not opposed to it, favors it? Would that person be able to join?
Your Honor, the faith pledge is unclear, but I would suppose that Lawyers for Christ requires their members to take a stand, and to take a stand that believe that this conduct is improper, that they believe.
And to condemn the conduct.
Yes, Your Honor, to say that this conduct is wrong. Going to the second point of the argument, that there is a less restrictive way of
enforcing this policy upon Lawyers for Christ.
Okay, well, you're running out of time, so maybe you can explain what it is. Is it only excessive entanglement that you're arguing under Lemon?
Your Honor, my co-counsel will address the excessive entanglement and argument under the Establishment Clause. But however, here, American with Disabilities Act, as well as the Solomon Amendment looked at by this court in Rumsfeld, it allowed an exception for all religious groups. In Rumsfeld specifically, it did not require that pacifist law schools had to accept military.
Well, what about the Title VII example that's given by the other side?
Well, Your Honor, in Title VII, there is also an exception for religious groups. They do not have to hire individuals into churches who carry a different message than they themselves have.
Yeah, but churches are a little bit of a different kettle of fish. You're not a church, right?
That's correct. We're not a church. But
right, and so other people, other than churches, which is an entanglement concern, aren't allowed to discriminate on the basis of religion, right? And that's regarded as a neutral law that's constitutional.
For employment purposes, yes, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, okay, but what if you, as an employer, really didn't want to associate with homosexuals, and that was a sincerely held belief of yours? Would Title VII be constitutionally applied there?
Well, the difference is that employers are different than expressive associations, because expressive associations come together specifically to promote a message. An employer usually does not create a whole employment opportunity for the chance just to express a message.
Are you saying that this is a violation of expressive association because you're religious, because you are a religious association, or that it is in general?
Just in general, as applied here, because it interferes with their ability. But this would be one less restrictive way of implicating the policy onto the organizations on campus.
Well, it would be less restrictive, too, if they just gave you an exception. I mean, that their problem is that it would be less restrictive, but it wouldn't accomplish what they need to do, which is they say they need to protect all the students, and the university just needs to make a statement that we're not going to give money to bigots.
Well, Your Honor, this court in Widmar versus Vinson also found that law students and even college students are of the maturity level to know the difference between what is university speech and what is the speech of an individual actor.
Boy, that's carrying a heavy burden, isn't it, to make that argument? College students and law students are capable of making that distinction.
Well, that is what this court held previously.
There were some of us who disagree with some of the things that the court says in some of their opinions, and that's one of them.
Well, Your Honor.
But you, just to be clear, you say you could have an exception for religion, but you also said they need an exception for the KKK, right?
Your Honor, Chief Justice, may I answer
you
this?
You can finish the question.
If it is found to
if
be...
If you include the Al-Qaeda with it.
Yes.
If they are found to be religious organizations, then they would meet the exception that we are proposing, and if their message would be lessened by forcing members of different beliefs into their organization, then yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, very well.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, good afternoon. My name is Rich Weiner, and I, too, represent the respondents, Lawyers for Christ. I will explain why Cervenka University's policy violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Lawyers for Christ's refusal to abandon the principled religious beliefs in light of the university's policy has resulted in the revocation of school funding and school recognition, actions that place the very existence of the club at risk. Establishment Clause questions are analyzed under a three-pronged test developed by this court in Lemon versus Kurtzman. Three-pronged Lemon test asks first whether the policy in question has a valid secular purpose.
It hasn't had any demonstrable impact on your organization, has it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It hasn't really had any demonstrable impact on the operations of the organization.
The implementation and enforcement of the policy has indeed have a demonstrable impact on Lawyers for Christ. They have lost membership. Now, the record is admittedly unclear as to why this membership has been reduced, but what is clear is that the loss of membership resulted immediately upon the heels of the revocation of official school recognition and school funding. So the natural inference from the record is and should be one of the loss of membership as a result of the implementation.
I'm not so sure. It kind of came right on the heels of you deciding you wanted to kick people out, right? You decided that we were going to kick out anybody who wasn't in our religion, or nobody was welcome if they weren't a member of our religion, if they were gay, and suddenly you had fewer members, and this came as a shock to you?
There you go. It did not come as a shock to us. However, what was shocking was the fact that the university trampled upon Lawyers for Christ's religious freedoms by forcing upon them and implementing this policy of non-discrimination.
How much of a shock was it? You kind of knew ahead of time.
That the policy was in effect?
Yeah.
What was shocking was that it was in effect for 20 years and was never, in fact, enforced. And it was only enforced upon Lawyers for Christ stating their principled religious beliefs on paper.
Are there other organizations that don't comply with the policy that you know of that the university didn't enforce?
None that we know of, Your Honor. However, there are.
How can you say it wasn't enforced for 20 years?
Well, as opposing counsel stated, the Lawyers for Christ existed in another form, but held the same beliefs for over 20 years.
But they didn't have the faith pledge.
They had the non-discrimination pledge.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
And you had a non-discrimination pledge.
Correct, and they existed side by side with each other.
Were you keeping homosexuals out for 20 years?
Your Honor, the record is unclear as to that. However, what is clear is that the beliefs of the
sounds like Clinton's policy of don't ask, don't tell. You don't know what you have.
It does sound like that, Your Honor. However, the club, Lawyers for Christ, in its fundamental religious tenets, espouse the belief that sexual activity outside of marriage, including homosexual conduct outside of marriage, is antithetical to their beliefs. So it is
right, but that seems to be a point in their favor. They say, you always had these beliefs, you always said these things, have at it. We're concerned about conduct, and it's when you start kicking people out of your organization, then it more directly affects our students. That's their story. That's kind of their idea. They're not trying to interfere with your beliefs. What's your sense of that?
Well, my sense of that is that they are interfering with our beliefs, and they're actually interfering and inhibiting our religion by the enforcement of the policy. As this court noted in Gillette versus United States, a case that dealt with a provision in the Military Selective Service Act that exempted from military duty those who were opposed to all wars based upon a religious objection, but did not exempt from service those who were opposed on mere moral objection to the war, that religious beliefs are fundamental to a person. And to hold that Lawyers for Christ must, on the one hand, abide by this non-discrimination policy, but at the same time recognize that this non-discrimination policy embodies tenets that are reprehensible to the organization is going to inhibit their religion.
Oh, so you think if the Federalists established a chapter that said we're not going to accept gays, that they could be regulated while Lawyers for Christ can't be?
The Federalist Society, Your Honor?
Yeah. Certainly. Well, that's an example, whatever society you want to pick. If it said we're not going to accept gays, they could regulate that?
Yes, Your Honor, because the Federalist Society would not be basing their objection on a religious belief. It would be a moral objection, and this court has not found that moral objections warrant the protection of the First Amendment in that situation, but religious objections do.
So you disagree with your colleague's view that your position requires that the KKK be funded by the university?
Well, the KKK would not be able to exclude members based upon race, but would be able to, if it was based upon the religious beliefs, but the KKK is not a religion.
So you disagree with your colleague.
In terms of the Establishment Clause analysis, I do, not in terms of the freedom of expressive association.
Oh, I see, but while you say that your Establishment Clause argument wouldn't apply, you still think that all these other problems would apply. The Federalist Society would be entitled to funds as a matter of expressive association.
As a matter of expressive association, yes, but not as a matter of Establishment Clause questions, because they don't have a religion that is being affected, and there is a distinction.
Well, what happened to Justice Scalia's case that said that as long as it's of general applicability, it's valid when applied to a religion? The Smith case.
Yeah, versus yeah. That was a free exercise question, and if Your Honors would like, I could address that. However, being as this was brought to the Establishment Clause question, Justice Scalia's opinion that a neutral law of general applicability that incidentally burdens religion will not offend the Constitution is not necessarily applicable.
If you don't have a free exercise claim, it's really hard to see you having an Establishment Clause claim. I don't think this university is trying to set up a religion. I mean, if you've got a story, it's because it's inhibiting your exercise of your religion, right? I mean, it does have much more of a feel of a free exercise case.
It does have a definite feel of a free exercise case. However, the university is not necessarily establishing a religion, but it is inhibiting a religion, and it's inhibiting religion.
That sounds like free exercise.
Well, this court stated in Lemon that the Establishment Clause both prevents the advancement of a religion and also the inhibition of religion, and both should be looked at equally. Now, admittedly, this court has not dealt with in great detail cases that address the Establishment Clause from the inhibition standpoint. However, this is one case that does present facts that support the idea that Cervenka University's policy of non-discrimination, as it's enforced and implemented against Lawyers for Christ, does in fact inhibit their religion. Furthermore, as was stated in the Ninth Circuit in American Family Association versus City and County of San Francisco, a resolution that was passed in response to American Family Association, which is known as the Religious Right Proclamations Against Homosexuality, was not found to have the primary effect of inhibiting religion because it did not actually impede the ability of the religious right to exercise as a group. However, the university's policy, the enforcement and implementation of its policy, has carried distinct and definite penalties that have resulted in the revocation of school funding, access to email listservs, and official school recognition. These are tangible benefits that have inhibited their ability to as a religious organization.
Can you explain where the entanglement comes into this?
Certainly, Your Honor. The entanglement comes in on two levels. As this court stated in Lemon, it involves both continuing oversight and also the potential for political divisiveness. As to the second point of political divisiveness, as noted on page 5 of the record, after the revocation of Lawyers for Christ student membership and official recognition, a wave of controversy followed upon the school. As this court stated in Healy, that the universities are the marketplaces of ideas, this raises particular concerns about the potential for unrest on the university's campus.
You're going to tell me that the five people who are a member of your organization went totally nuts, aren't you? Right. I mean, everything that does, that comes to this case is a matter of some controversy. I don't think that's what we mean. I mean, I'm more persuaded that with concerns of oversight. What is your concern there?
My concern there, Your Honor, is that in order for the university to effectively and honestly implement and enforce its policy, it needs to look beyond the mere faith pledges of organizations. Because if an organization is able to simply say, we don't tolerate discrimination, but then in fact discriminate, and the university is not going to...
No, but if an organization says we do discriminate, then you don't have to worry about it.
No, on the off chance that an organization like LLC does say that. However, the university...
Why doesn't this faith pledge and the other aspects of the policy of your organization, and the national organization in particular, why isn't that a policy that on its face discriminates?
Well, it is on its face discriminatory, Your Honor. However, the question of entanglement goes beyond that.
But why do you have to go beyond?
You're trying to bring some facial challenge as opposed to an as-applied one that some other organization is going to get dragged into this?
Well, I'm presenting to the court the idea that Lawyers for Christ, had it not in his faith pledge openly discriminated against homosexual conduct and on religion, but it had instead adopted a view that we accept everyone and all persons into our organization, but then after the implementation of its faith pledge did in fact engage in discriminatory conduct, the university would necessarily have to evaluate that conduct.
You're going ahead. Why, if the organization says we intend to discriminate, why do you have to go beyond that to see if it really does discriminate? If its policy is discriminatory, why do we have to go beyond that?
You don't, Your Honor. In that situation, you don't.
So there's no undue entanglement with respect to your case?
With our case, there is not.
Okay. This is a question of this has got to be – sure.
There is entanglement with our –
excessive entanglement?
There is excessive entanglement with the case in the case at bar. The university, however, in terms of the discriminatory conduct, is able to look at the face – on its face, our faith pledge, and determine that we are engaging in discriminatory
Why
conduct.
Is there excessive entanglement when all they have to do is read – your policy?
Because in the event that the Lawyers for Christ ever changes its faith pledge,
well, look, if I had four wheels, I'd be a wagon. Is your story that you're making some sort of broader facial challenge that you have standing to do that, or I mean, there's got to be something more, I think, because we know without entanglement that you're violating the policy, right? So as to you, there isn't an entanglement problem. But you said you wanted to qualify your answer and say that there was an entanglement problem. What is the entanglement problem?
The entanglement problem is not hinged solely on the fact that there is continuing oversight on the university or the government entity in question's position. It also couples with that the potential, as I said earlier, for political divisiveness. And there is, admittedly, on the record, the potential for political divisiveness.
From people who want to discriminate on all sorts of grounds?
Well, no, Your Honor, from the potential that student organizations recognize the fact, and students in general will recognize the fact, that an organization whose stated religious beliefs are in contravention to the university's policy had those religious beliefs trampled upon.
So when the students at the school protest, how does the state establish a religion?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You said it violates the Establishment Clause. I mean, you've sort of plucked little things from cases. I'm asking you, all right, your story is when they cut you off, there was big debate on campus. That violates the Establishment Clause. And my only question is why.
No, it does not, Your Honor. That is not our position. Our position is that the university's policy fails the Lemon Test under both the second prong and also the third prong. The potential for political divisiveness is an aspect of the third prong of the Lemon Test, coupled with continuing oversight. Those two factors together make up the third prong. However, the challenged university policy must pass all three prongs of the Lemon Test. If it fails even one, then it is unconstitutional. So putting aside, if Your Honors would like, the third prong of the Lemon Test, the second prong of the Lemon Test still succeeds. The university's policy has a direct and primary effect of inhibiting the religion the religion of Lawyers for Christ in particular.
Counsel, I asked opposing counsel if they had read Good News versus Milford. Did you come across that in your
I'm
research?
I'm familiar with the case, Your Honor.
You are? And isn't it dispositive? Don't you win under that case?
Well, Good News, if I'm not mistaken, dealt with denial of access to religious organizations' use of school facilities.
Right. Right. Isn't that what you're asking for?
We are asking for that, Your Honor. However,
why isn't it dispositive?
Well, Lamb's Chapel also...
Right, it builds on Lamb's Chapel, but why doesn't that decide the case?
Well, the other side would say, wouldn't it, that you can still have a meeting on campus,
correct,
right?
Your Honor. We still have use of school facilities. The school has allowed Lawyers for Christ to meet on campus and has allowed Lawyers for Christ to have limited access to certain advertising techniques.
But certainly the language of Good News says you can't discriminate religious organizations at all, doesn't it say that?
It does in terms of granting them access, Your Honor. Absolutely it does. The university's policy has the primary effect of inhibiting religion, and it also encourages excessive government entanglement with religion. The university has an admittedly noble goal of its intent to erase discrimination and intolerance from the university's campus, has instead succeeded in fostering and sustaining that very intolerance against Lawyers for Christ. For the foregoing reasons, we respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the Moot Circuit and remand this case to the district court for trial on the merits.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weiner. Very well, you have time for rebuttal.
Your Honors, one point on rebuttal. Opposing counsel relied heavily on Boy Scouts of America versus Dale, saying that the school is violating LFC's First Amendment right to expressive association. However, while the Dale case held that the Boy Scouts are allowed to discriminate within their organization, this right does not necessarily extend past the Boy Scouts' door, as the Second Circuit case, Boy Scouts of America versus Wyman, illustrates. And in that case, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals held that the Boy Scouts' expressive association rights were not violated when the state refused to allow the Boy Scouts, as a private organization, to participate in the state's workplace charitable campaign.
Well, don't we need a trial, though? I mean, if this is going to be a question of degree, whether it's really killing the organization or doing something less, don't we have to figure out what effect your policy is having on this group in order to tell whether it's an excessive burden on their religious association?
Your Honor, there is no triable issue of fact. Summary judgment is appropriate. because the non-moving party here, LFC, has failed to make a sufficient showing on the essential elements of its case with respect to which it has the burden of proof, both that adhering to the policy impairs the message and also that the school is excessively intimidated.
I mean, they said they went from 8 members to 5. That's like a lot. You know, percentage-wise, that's like 40% or something like that. And why doesn't that create a triable issue of fact on whether you are really killing this organization off by not letting them send emails and not giving them money?
Well, Your Honor, as your Associate Justice pointed out, the record does not state why membership has decreased, and it was LFC's burden to show that their membership decreased because of the school's actions, and therefore there is no triable issue.
They haven't had that opportunity, have they? That's what a trial would seek to establish.
Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I briefly answer
this
question?
Please.
Because LFC instituted this action, it did have the burden of showing the essential elements, and it has failed to do so, and therefore this court should
reverse. Well, don't we draw the inference that if it went to 8-5 that this is the reason we draw the inference most favorable to the plaintiff, non-moving party?
No, Your Honor, because LFC did have the burden and has failed to show that its membership decreased because of the school's actions. And as Justice Goldstein pointed out, the membership could have decreased because of LFC's new bylaws. And therefore, this court
should. Coulda, woulda, shoulda, though. That's not the answer. We don't know why.
Exactly, Your Honor. But it was LFC's burden to show that, and they have failed to do so. And that is why summary judgment is appropriate. Thank
all right. Thank you very much. The case will be submitted for consideration. We also want to thank you all for your wonderful presentation this afternoon. I think the audience would like to join us in a round of applause to the institution. We've decided is we will adjourn briefly, then return. The results will be announced at the banquet tonight, but we'll have several comments that we'll make as soon as we return. So we'll be back. Don't go too far. We don't want everybody lost on the way to dinner. So.
All right.
Do it that way. Okay. Just briefly, we can.
Good job. Oh, that was intense.
Oh, I'm sorry. We ignored the
girl, Mr. John.
Thank you.
All rise.
I just wear mine like it's a, like the people at the University of the South, they wear these old things all the time. It's swanky, and I'm the same way. It just flaps in the wind. Oh, we lost half our crowd, didn't we? Well, that's all right. Well, the purpose of this is mainly to thank the participants and to tell you each, well, the alternates don't get any credit. They're just here. But the four of you that... The four of you that argued, each of you had some very strong points. So, you know, it's hard to respond to our questions always, but it's being persistent and being careful of what you say. That's the key to the appellate advocacy that I think is most important. Each of you had strong points in the way you made your presentations, but you also let us trick you and trip you up a bit. So from that perspective, that's something just to remember down the road and in the future if you ever do this again. But it was hard for us. We have made the decision, which we'll announce at the banquet, but needless to say, it was one of the more difficult ones because each of you had strong points, each had a few weaknesses, and the problem was a hell of a problem, to put it mildly. I don't see how you you did as well as you did. It's a good thing we didn't see any briefs because I think we would have been really convinced. But I think what you did is you, again, as the two final teams, obviously we don't know anything about the other competitors, so we really can't rank or discuss or know much other than that. But certainly it's obvious that the competition was well worth the effort. You've done a wonderful job. I think all of us are very pleased to have participated and to seen again how marvelous it is that you're willing to take so much time and so much preparation to put on such an event as this. So, do any of my colleagues have anything else they would like to add at this time?
We thought it was very close. So, that's almost like everyone winning. It was harder to decide, as we said in conference, than the cases that come before us, because the quality was so good.
Yeah, I think all of you have the inherent capabilities of being outstanding litigators, so I hope all of you will pursue careers in litigation.
Well, I really don't have anything to add, except that I still don't know how I should have cast my vote.
Professor?
No, I think that you guys hopefully had a great time. It was terrific fun for us. I think that you were pressed in a reasonable way and tried to have a good conversation with the people on the bench and to recognize that that's what it is, that you're being pushed on what matters to the judges, pushed to the logical limits of your position. That's what this exercise is about. I thought everybody did a terrific job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.